The UK Report.
With Gavin Gray. Gavin, do you knit much out of interest? Good morning.
That is not a skill I possess, sadly, but I wouldn't mind learning.
It is actually something that I think I should probably pick up. The closest I've done is crocheting. Back in the school, back in the day, I suppose, when school, you know, as a girl, you had to do this and a boy, you had to do this. We went to woodwork while the girls went into knitting classes. And our woodwork teacher was not there for the one lesson. So we were asked to be taken care of by the knitting teacher. And she taught us to crochet. It was the only time I ever crocheted anything, though, I must say.
And how did it go?
It went all right. We did a round thing. So we just kept on going around and around. It would have made for a very nice potential coaster, tea, cover, or whatever the case may be.
But I hope you still got it, Africa.
I think I may have undone it and given the wool to my grandmother, who was a master knitter.
Oh, no.
But on to matters worldly, I suppose. Let's start in Catalonia, shall we? What is the latest in the standoff for the Catalan independence?
Well, Carles Puigdemont, so he's the former leader who has now had the subject of an EU warrant issued. He is therefore wanted in Spain under arrest. He's in Belgium. He denies he's seeking asylum. But he's now calling for all separatist parties to unite in the regional elections that the central government forced them to hold again just before Christmas. He says it's vital that those separatist parties unite to strengthen the hand in the continued push for independence. The snap poll was called by Spain and Madrid after the Catalan parliament declared independence. And then, of course, Mariano Rajoy, the Spanish premier, reacted by imposing direct rule. So despite being sought by the courts, Carles Puigdemont says he's ready to run in the poll, but he's only going to return to Spain with his a few of his former colleagues, senior colleagues as well, when it is clear he can get a fair trial. Now, they all face charges of rebellion, sedition, and misuse of public funds for pursuing Catalan independence. Those charges are very, very serious, Africa. They could, in effect, face up to 30 years in jail. And already the stakes are high because some of his ministers who remained in Spain did get arrested, did appear in court, and were immediately held in custody. So local politicians that had been rightfully elected have now been held in custody, and that has led to large demonstrations across Catalonia.
It's only a story we're paying very close attention to. Now, there's a transatlantic tug of war breaking out over the final resting place of a dead millionaire who had a wife both in America and in Britain.
Yes, this guy, Paul Lewis Marigi, he was a former Morgan Stanley financier and a World War II hero. He was extremely wealthy, and he died last year at the age of 97. What a life he led, including buying a Maserati motor car for millions of South African rand, I would guess. In his 90s, he bought that car. Anyway, he had a very interesting life. As I said, he fought in World War II, fell in love, and married a British woman down on the south coast of England. However, that wartime romance split up because he said, I've got to move back to the United States. I've been offered a good job there, and I've got to move. Well, she refused to follow, saying, I just can't leave the UK. I've got all my family here. And so they consequently split up. He then moved to America and married another woman. And that marriage lasted decades. But eventually, they split up. And when they did, Paul Marigi decided to move back to the UK and immediately remarried his first wife back in Britain. So a very complicated life. And sadly, when he died, it's now turning into a very complicated matter because his American family say he should be buried in America. His British family say he should be buried in Britain. And it's all going through the courts, I'm afraid. And as you can imagine, he is a wealthy man. And no doubt the solicitors on both sides of the Atlantic are struggling to win their case. This is going backwards and forwards in court now. And I'm afraid this man who had an incredible life, sadly now is having a rather controversial death too.
Very sad. Now, a brother of the French jihadist who murdered 7 people in Toulouse, including 3 Jewish children, has been jailed for 20 years.
Yes, this, if you remember, was the first sort of big attack on French homeland soil related to Islamic State. It was in 2012, and Mohamed Mira shot 3 soldiers and then 3 children and a teacher at a Jewish school. But he was shot dead by the security forces after a 32-hour siege. So nobody was ever brought to trial, nobody until this week, when his brother, has, as you say, appeared in court. And basically, Abdelkabir Mera was accused of mentoring and encouraging his brother's interest in jihadism, helping him steal a scooter as well that was used in the attack. He denied these allegations. His lawyers argued he was only being pursued by prosecutors because there was nobody else to put on trial. Mohamed Mera had been shot dead by security forces. But he has now been found guilty of these terrorism offenses. And alongside another man, Feta Malki, who was jailed for providing Mohamed Mera with a weapon, ammunition, and a bulletproof vest. And it's been a very high-profile trial. Reporting on it had been restricted owing to the tight security. And prosecutors had asked for life imprisonment for Abdelkabir Mera and 20 years for Feta Malki. So, in a sense, I suppose they might be slightly disappointed. One jailed there for 14 years, another for 20 years. But nevertheless, substantial prison sentences for being associated with somebody that carried out that horrific crime.
The mysteries of the pyramids have deepened with the discovery by French scientists of what appears to be a giant void within the Khufu monument in Egypt.
Yes, it's a really exciting thing, this, whether or not you're into Egyptology or archaeology. This is just amazing. So the Great Pyramid, or Khufu's Pyramid, is really one of the prize tourist exhibits, of course, one of the pyramids on the outskirts of Cairo. And that was constructed sometime around 2500 BC, 460 feet in height, that's 140 meters. It's the largest of the Egyptian pyramids just in that area at Giza. And now it's been discovered by a team of French scientists along with Japanese scientists using something called muography. And that can sense density changes inside large rock structures. And they have discovered this cavity existing in the main pyramid. Now, big cavity, you think, well, so what? But this cavity is huge that they have discovered. So the question mark is, does it contain anything of value, like the ancient pharaoh pyramid have done in the past, the king's chamber, or is it simply an empty void? And the reason that empty voids is a very real possibility is because builders wanted to avoid the collapse by relieving some of the stress on the overlying weight of the stone. Even though it's stone, those pyramids are so heavy that, of course, they can crush the layers beneath them. So we know that muography suggests there is a very large gap. We don't know what, if anything, is in that gap. And the big question is, what they're going to do next. There has been some suggestion they might actually drill very small holes in order to try and put a camera in there with a light just to see what it is. But this is quite a big rock to drill through, and of course they don't want to in any way damage the existing thing there. The newly identified structure is said to sit above the existing King's Gallery, which was 47 meters long and 8 meters high. So this is really, really big. The new cavity appears to be 30 meters long and several meters in height.
Fascinating. Now, a Chinese millionaire has paid quite a bit of money for a single measure of vintage scotch, which turned out to be fake.
Yes, and so wasn't overly happy with that. But to be fair, because he bought it at a Swiss hotel, the Swiss hotel owners played very fair and effectively gave him his money back. But it was they who actually suggested going to some whiskey experts in order to see if the dram, which had already been drunk but was part of a much bigger batch, was in fact real or not, was in fact genuine or not. So quite an extraordinary story, this. So a very wealthy Chinese businessman decided to say, well, he saw this hugely expensive bottle of whiskey on the shelf and said, I fancy a taste of that. There was a bit of aghast astonishment because this bottle had never been opened. It had been bought by the previous hotel owner and then bought again by the new hotel owner in Switzerland, and they decided to give it a go. Well, the Chinaman who bought it said it did taste good, but it didn't taste perhaps as good as it should have done, because it was supposed to be dated in the 19th century, so over about 130, 140 years old. And for a single dram, it cost many tens of thousands of South African rand. They agreed to go off and have this done and tested by some experts in Scotland. And they came back and said, no, it's a pretty ordinary dram, to be honest. And the hotel owner made his way to China, flew to China and said I'm sorry, we did sell you a fake, and here's your money back. So everyone's satisfied there, except I guess, the person who bought the original bottle.
£7,600 for a single serving measure of vintage scotch. I would have run away at that very point already, Gavin Gray. But when you are a Chinese millionaire, I suppose it doesn't make a difference, does it? Gavin, thank you very much. As always, he's with us again next week, Sunday.